Hey everybody, and it's Forrest saying welcome again to the Ageless Path podcast, and I'm really delighted to have my friend Teresa Minock here on the program. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for
Great.
having me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you sound great and you look great on camera here. The podcast folks, you'll also see this in video form on our YouTube channel, but I want to welcome you as your screen moniker is the ND mom. Now, what is that? It's neurodivergent mom. Now, I also call you the never defeated mom, but that's that's my own addition there. So tell us what this wonderful branch of your coaching practice is about, working with moms that have got challenges in their family.
Yeah. So first off, I want to address what is neurodivergent, because I think that a lot of people don't know. And that's a conversation starter, right? So neurodivergent or neurodiversity, neurodivergent is speaking of one person. Neurodiversity is speaking of many people. Okay. So I myself am neurodivergent. So I am dyslexic and have ADHD. I have four kids who are all neurodivergent. So all four of them have a sensory processing disorder, which means their nerves are overactive. My eldest is 14 and he has autism, OCD, ADHD, anxiety, and a sensory disorder. My second has dyslexia, dysgraphia, and a sensory disorder, and suspect to be ADHD, inattentive. My third has hyperactive ADHD and a sensory disorder and anxiety. And my fourth has something totally different called Marfan's syndrome. And he also has a sensory disorder.
Wow.
So neurodiversity itself is anything that makes the brain quote unquote different. And I want to actually open up that conversation. So what I mean by different is there's neurotypicals and then there's neurodivergent.
Sure.
And so it's autism, OCD, ADHD, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, dyspraxia, Tourette's. So anything that is causing the brain flow, the blood flow in the brain to move differently. And I work with individuals that are neurodivergent, and I work with the parents that have children that are neurodivergent.
Wow, super. You know, this is so, so important, because people might hear ADHD or not really know what we mean when we say anxiety or cognitive shifts like that. But thank you for opening this conversation, because there are some folks who might say, well, my son is having a little difficulty, but not be okay talking about what's really going on, and maybe not understanding it themselves. So you're working both with the family member, but the family around them. Really important.
Yeah, it is really important. I think that as parents, there's a lot of what's put on parents just in general. But then when you have a neurodiverse or neurodivergent child, there's extra, right? There's what society is saying we should or should not do as a parent.
Yeah.
There's doctors, there's therapists that are all telling us what we should and shouldn't do as a parent. And then there's all of the bias that we grow up hearing and listening to about autism or ADHD or OCD, Tourette's, all of the things, dyslexia. It's very common for people that are neurodivergent to have bias put on them by society. Have you ever heard lazy or can't sit still or behavior problem, illiterate? These are all very common words that are put on neurodivergent people. And so the parents are managing what they've grown up hearing and listening to. And these are all unconscious bias that they have in their mind. And then they're raising a child that they love dearly. And they're trying to show up and serve the child the best that they can. But what happens is there's a lot of cognitive dissonance happening in their mind
Oh.
of what is the right thing. And then they get overwhelmed and confused and you name it, right? All of the, I should have done this, not this. What if I'm not being a good mom? What if I, do I need to have this therapy? You know, did it, so there's so much that people could be thinking about as a parent.
Well, and maybe on the unseen level, a sense of, gee, what did I do wrong that this poor person, this kid, might have this neurodivergent situation? I'll just speak about my wonderful brother John, 2 years younger than me. He grew up all through his life kind of at odds with dad. It turns out he couldn't read. He was quite dyslexic. His whole life has been directed to avoid those situations where he'd be embarrassed. And when in a public situation, if he had to read from a contract and or from a book or something, we've had those deals, he struggled and it was awful. And people, I think, don't know what's going on. And the bias is a huge point you make. Wow.
It's so true. And the thought around it is that the person's not intelligent.
Boom. Oh.
Right.
That's
but what... but in actuality, the intelligence IQ is relative, right? My IQ is 151. But if you put me in front of a group and had me read a report, I would panic.
Oh my.
And I would look at the paper.
Yeah.
And to me, it would look like I'm looking at a different language. It would look like French or Spanish to me.
Wow.
Because I have a language processing in my mind.
Yes.
Right. And when I, and anytime I get nervous, my brain shuts off the ability to read English.
Yeah. Oh my. Wow. Well, this is really touching. And I must say, in my circle, I have a wonderful woman named Denise, and she is the geriatric mental health nurse for the Kitsap County area. Now, what does that mean? She's working with families where a family member is suffering from dementia, the different stages of that. Well, how interesting. That may be seen as just an old folks condition, but neurodiversity, you're helping me see, it's got a much broader and an ageless quality, I might say.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I want to start looking at neurodiversity not as a disability or something that's wrong with the brain. I want to start looking at it more like it's a culture, right? It's almost like you see a person with different, you know, shades of skin, they're probably going to have a culture around them.
Yeah.
And I want to start looking at the brain that way too.
Wow.
Right. Instead of looking at something's off, something's missing, something's disabled, there's no disability in being neurodivergent. It's finding the gifts and building upon those and supporting what we need help with.
Fabulous. Wow, Teresa. Well, I'm very inspired just because of the new learning I'm getting right here. And right here in the early part of the podcast, let's give folks your contact information. We've got some of the things we want to touch on, but what is the best way for folks to be in touch with you and to access this kind of work?
Yeah, absolutely. The, T-H-E, N, N as in Nancy, D as in dog, N-D, mom.com.
Great.
And you can feel free to go on there and schedule a session with me or take a look at some of the work that I've been doing.
Fabulous. Wow. The ndmom.com.
Yeah.
And that's the never defeated mom too, folks. Teresa, what a light you're bringing. And I'm just touched by it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
I'm choking up a bit because I see how my good brother John has gone through life struggling and feeling less than. And here he is as a 67-year-old handyman. And I'm not putting him down, but that's the path he took. And I have another great friend who has been dyslexic and really suffering with it. And I guess I'm feeling my heart touched by all this, you know? And in that way, people are challenged. Let me turn off this phone. People are challenged as to how to treat either the elder who's struggling with cognitive change or the kid who might be seen as, you know, he's just a lot of trouble, and you know, he can't sit still in school, and they start getting treated differently than the little girls who are sitting in straight rows, all that stuff. And anyway, it's got a lot of reach, and it touches me.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say that, and I don't know how much time we have, but I want to say this because I feel like it's a conversation that needs to be had. Is we think of neurodivergent as a boy's thing or a men's thing, right? But there's a huge and all of the studies up until the last few years have all been on men's and boys and men and boys, right? So all of the information that's out there is not geared towards women. So there are a lot of women that are out there that are not diagnosed or they're misdiagnosed because they're being told that they have anxiety or mental problems. Often bipolar is a huge one of being misdiagnosed. And the reason is because there's not enough information about women and what it looks like to be neurodivergent as a woman. And so again, this is work that I do. And so a lot of times I am helping a parent with their child and they're realizing that they are neurodivergent, or their child is being diagnosed, but they realize, wait a minute, this is ringing true for me. And then all of a sudden light bulbs are going off and they're understanding and realizing that there's something going on with their mind as well that maybe they need to understand and look at.
Wow, Teresa. Well, this is, it opens up a lot of dimensions here, because again, in the cultural mindset, where if a woman is emotional or not coping well or whatever, I know there's, I've seen some unevolved men say, well, you know, it must be her time of the month. And this, you know, sort of women are emotional because of hormones and all that kind of dishonoring stuff. I mean, the society may not be all tuned into folks who are actually working with neurodiversity. Wow. Well, I'm really touched by this. You know, you've shared with me too that you've got some other deep experience in another dimension, which is being a mom of four kids, each as you've described with different challenges. You've had another bit significant challenge, which is the loss of your husband. And now a single mom, what is this idea of living grief? Let's touch on that for a second. Tell us more, because I'm just, it's another heart toucher for me.
So I lost my husband May of 2020. So that is what I would personally, these are my words that I made up. That is death grief, right? Someone, my husband, my partner died. And my kids and I live with that grief, and that comes in waves, comes and goes, right? My son, my youngest, my 6-year-old, has been diagnosed with Marfan syndrome, which is the same type of illness that my husband passed from. We did not know that he had it. It was completely undiagnosed. So his death was very, very sudden. It was less than 24 hours, and it came on without anybody knowing. No one had a clue that he had this condition until postmortem.
That's
But
crazy.
then once we figured out that he had it, it is a genetic condition. And we had the kids tested, and I found out that my youngest has it. And with the testing, my husband would have been considered mild, whereas my son is considered moderate. And he has a lot of different issues going on with his heart, his eyes, and just different parts of his body that are going to need surgical interventions soon in the next few years. And there are things that I have to look for in his body and in his health. But what did this do, right? So what is living grief? I had a story in my mind of what it was going to be like to be a mom. I had a story in my mind of what our lives were going to be like. And my husband passed away, and all of that blew up. And that was part of the grief. But then what happened was my mind, to protect itself and to heal, started building a whole new story about what our life would be like and what I'm going to do as a mom and how I'm going to build this life. And I'm going to create this and I'm going to do this and this whole story. And then my son was diagnosed and it blew up again. And then every time I go to see the doctors and they tell me another thing that is going on with my son that's alarming or needs to be addressed soon, or they're watching over, and it all has to do with fatality.
Oh, geez.
My son is 6 years old and he has a fatal condition. And I don't know day to day how he is going to be or what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So what I do is I try not to build stories around my son's health. I try and stick with the facts of today. He is healthy today. And it is something that I live with, living grief. Because I don't know what's going to happen when he hits puberty. The doctors tell me puberty is tricky.
Wow.
Lots of surgeries are coming up in puberty, right? When I come home or when I pick him up from school and he says, "Mom, my heart hurts." Or he comes to me and he says, I need to lay down. My heart hurts. Or I can't feel my fingers. Those are all indicators for me that we need to go to the hospital. And I never know when that's going to happen.
Teresa, that's just, you know, as a hospice worker, they have a saying that they shared with us, which is a death takes a thousand tellings. A death takes a thousand tellings. So there's death grief. And then they talk about anticipatory grief, the fear of the next shoe dropping, the next calamity. And I mean, you are an expert witness on this in a profound way. And you know, what can we say to people about the mindset that you might suggest about making up stories? Well, I guess you've already said it, but I think this is really an important conversation.
Yeah, I think that for me personally, in my experience, just being there for the person and listening, bringing by a meal when you know that they've been at the hospital all day, or sending them a DoorDash gift, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just sending them a note saying, "Hey, I'm thinking about you." Doing little things that can do self-care, you know, send them a bath bomb.
Yeah.
But I think most importantly, the things that I have noticed, I'm not a person that gets upset easy and I don't get offended easy. What does get me though, is when people tell me that knowing what my son has is a blessing. Or when they come to me and they start telling me that they think that there's a cure.
Okay.
Yeah. Or they think that if I just do this therapy or that, fix it. It's a genetic condition that there's no cure of. And if I went down that path, that's just not helpful. There is no cure at this time. And that doesn't mean that there won't be before I pass. But at this time, there is no cure. I like to stick with the facts and not build stories around them. And it's super unhelpful when other people are coming and trying to give me rainbows and pixies and daisies on something that's not. It's more helpful to stay in a neutral space. I don't want to go to doom and gloom of, no, you don't understand. My son is going to die before I am. I don't actually know that. It could be that he does. And it could be that he outlasts me. But what I do like to do is stick with the facts and have people around me who are loving and compassionate and accept me for how I am today and accept my children for how they are today. Because we all live with living grief.
Well, it's something to say. And that being in grief or working with it and living with it doesn't mean folding our life up and stopping our life and stopping being caring or being, you know, cynical about who, you know, what's going to happen next. That's a story, which is perhaps one I've done after being in Vietnam. I had a story I carried for quite a while that there was just going to be more doom coming. And I think I'd like to think I've grown out of that, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know how you feel in working with Lucas and with your work with the family and with others, but I think you're an important resource to voice about this, and I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. I
Yeah.
appreciate it.
Yeah.
If you ever want to talk about the doom, impending doom, it's so interesting that you say that because you're not the only one. There are a lot of people that are just waiting for the shoe to drop, waiting for America to fall or war to happen or economic to fail. And this is what I use in my living grief, right? And it's also what I would say to anyone that is waiting for something bad to happen is it does something to your nervous system. And it's worrying about something that hasn't happened yet. So embrace today. What can you do today to
Nice.
bring yourself love and joy? How can you feel all of your feelings and allow them to be there and not live in doom of what could happen?
This is the advanced course, and this is truly a major meditation right there. The thought that we're sharing with our listeners, with ourselves, is okay, there is this risk, there is that situation, I have feelings about it, and I'm choosing to have a mindset that I'll be as resilient as I can. I'll feel it. I won't deny everything, but I'll be as active as I can on the positive side, if that's being of support to others or getting out and taking a run or whatever it might be. But not to fold our life up because unexpected things have happened, and they happen to everybody at some point in life.
Yeah, you said the most important thing. I can feel this, and I can feel this, right? I can feel love, and I can feel grief.
Yes.
I can feel fear, and I can feel excited,
Nice. Nice.
right? I can feel determined to keep going on with life.
Fabulous. I love this. You are wonderful. I am so delighted to have this nice conversation, one of many we'll have. And Teresa Minak, you are sweet, and I'm not going to tell you I know how you must be going through all this, but you're sharing with us your best self in the context of this and extending your hand to be of support to others. Really, that's what it's about.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody. It's Forrest and Teresa Minak here on the Ageless Path. And we're saying aloha to everybody.
Aloha.
Yeah.